I can't talk to Mark because it's like 2 a.m. his time, and I'm in the middle of traveling through Istanbul, and I missed my connection. Oh my god. Okay.
Oh my god. Tell me about that.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Jumbo Rapids fans, habari za gioni na karibu qua Holding the High Line. Good evening and welcome to HTHL.
Wow.
It is Wednesday, September 25th, 2024. Jina langu ni Matayo. My name is Matt Pollard. I am
wow.
Back. I am back from my trip to Tanzania where I put some miles on my soul with Engineers Without Borders. I did not get malaria, nor was I eaten by a lion. At time of recording, plastering is being finished, and the students of the Bulolombeshi Primary School could be using their new toilet facility by the end of next week. In the time I was gone, the Rapids beat the Timbers, inexplicably lost to Sporting Kansas City, beat Toronto, clinched the playoffs, and signed Reggie Cannon. Oh, and Tanzania got a Rapids-like comeback win against Guinea in CAF qualification that would have made Chris Armas oh so very proud. Joining me now, my favorite Umzungo, for whom I feel much Ubuntu, Chicamo, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
What language is this? Is it Tanzanian? Like, that was amazing. You learned a lot of words, buddy.
It's Swahili, Mark. Swahili
is the language of Tanzania.
Yes.
Swahili, I did not know that.
Swahili and English is their official language, Mark. They were originally a German colony during the bad times of slave trade and extraction in the 1600s, 1700s in Africa, during the Race for Africa. And then I can't remember if it was after World War I or after World War II, but at some point in the treaty peace negotiations between the British and the bad guys in Germany, it switched over to being a British colony. So English is relatively common, at least in the metro semi-educated areas. And in the village where we were at, it was mostly Swahili and then native village tongues, of which I could not even attempt to imitate for you. It's like that Night at the Museum bit where Robin Williams, who plays Teddy Roosevelt, talks about like going to Africa and hearing like nothing but like clicking noises or whatever. But yes,
yeah,
I know some Swahili. Listeners, hopefully this is the second time that you've heard a redhead say Jumbo if you've seen the cult icon for millennials going to high school that is Mean Girls, where Lindsay Lohan's character is a sheltered girl who who grows up with her parents living in Africa and not knowing anything about high school dynamics, sees a table full of black people and walks into them and says Jumbo and immediately gets judged. But yes, I can speak some Swahili, Mark. My accent, I think, was okay there. Rabbi, what questions do you have for me about my trip? Because I feel like we could go for an hour on this, and it's the only thing I've been talking about to anyone other than Mike Edwards this week.
You're going to work backwards, so there's two questions I have. One, the last thing you said before you hit record was, I missed my connection in Istanbul, which, like, that is a whole, you know, there's literally a movie called, there's a scary old movie about a guy who gets arrested and does 9 years in a Turkish prison called Midnight Express. I've been to Istanbul, I think, 3 times, so, tales of Istanbul being a terrible place are roundly urban myth. But I would like to hear about how you missed a plane. I have great stories from my times in Turkey, but this is your time to shine. And the second thing is, I just want to hear about, you know, what you built and what it was like with the other engineers, where they were from, what makes someone who is an engineer in the United States feel possessed to travel around the world to, you know, do something that is, you know, they're never going to get to see again. They get no benefit from, to just do something that's like totally just like on a whim, you putting yourself out there. So tell me those two stories.
Yeah, so we'll start. We'll work our way in chronological order here, or the order in which you asked the questions, Mark.
Right.
Flying internationally when you have tight connections out of a developing world airport is a whole new experience that will put any horror story you have about Denver International to absolute shame.
Sure.
At one point, Mark, I boarded a flight that was 30 minutes delayed, and we went from being 30 minutes delayed to lining up to boarding, to boarding, to fully boarded, with at no point there being an actual announcement about the boarding. I am a well-traveled individual, listeners. This is a separate aside here, Mark. I have been to all seven continents. I have been on a lot of planes, in a lot of airports, in a lot of different countries that speak a lot of languages. At no point have I ever been on a flight in which there was no announcement in the concourse about that flight in question. But the Turkish Air flight from Istanbul to Dar es Salaam somehow achieved that. Coming back, so our connections, listeners, I took the longest nonstop flight that is now available out of DIA. So we were Turkish Air from Denver to Istanbul, the capital of Turkey, and then from Istanbul to Dar es Salaam, the economic hub of Tanzania, though Dodoma is the administrative capital, biggest city, the one with all the money, the one with all the ports, the one with all the international foreigners and everything is in Dar es Salaam. So Denver, Istanbul, Istanbul, Dar es Salaam, both on Turkish Air. And then we were on a puddle jumper from a, you know, a plane that was easily 30 years old, that was a Boeing plane that initially I got scared about, Mark. And then I remembered that was when Boeing built planes that actually lasted. So we were on a puddle jumper for an hour, hour and a half on the regional airline, Air Tanzania, from Dar es Salaam to Mwanza, which is the second biggest city in the country and our regional hub that we had for all the work that we were doing. So coming back, Dar es Salaam to Istanbul, we were delayed an hour and 15 minutes from boarding, which was basically all of the time that we had to make our connection for our direct nonstop from Istanbul to Denver to actually get back home. We took, for me, Mark, what I think is a personal record from landing to getting to the gate took like 25, 30 minutes. I've never had it take that long outside of one of the New York airports and then maybe Chicago O'Hare. No announcement about that whatsoever. When you're traveling internationally, you get a real mixed bag in terms of the in-flight staff and what languages they speak. And the only thing that they're really required to announce in is in the language of the airline in which they're traveling. So Turkish, I think, is Arabic, Mark, or maybe Turkish is its own language. In any case, we got
it's its own language.
Yes. So we got broken some of that. And on one of the flights, we got proper announcements in English from an automated system and then one from the actual pilot. So like I was messaging back and forth with my travel team member and we were on like Google Translate, like trying to figure out what was actually being said. So we had no idea what was happening. So we get off the plane. We absolutely bolt it. We try to make it. International flight rerouting us through the airport and everything, signage making no sense, none of it's in English, of course. And then so we finally get to security and we're like, according to Google, it says the flight hasn't actually taken off yet. And they're like, no, you're late, go to the counter. But because we ran to try to make our flight, we were actually on the front end of all the people who were in line to actually get rerouted. So the very, very nice guy who spoke broken English rerouted us. Turkish Air partners with United. So we got a flight to Dulles and then connecting through Dulles. So we were supposed to land, if everything was on time, at 5:40 p.m. In Denver. And we ended up getting home like 11:30. And I proceeded to get home. Finally was in bed at around 2 a.m. I had the next day off from work, thankfully, Mark. And between 2 a.m. that on that day and 3:30 the next morning when I finally could not sleep anymore, I probably got like 16 hours of sleep just from being up for 30 straight hours, you know, trying to sit upright through turbulence and everything. Okay, to actually explain what I was doing. Listeners, I am a volunteer with Engineers Without Borders, specifically the Denver Professional Chapter. Most of you I feel like most people have not heard of EWB, but they've heard of Doctors Without Borders. Same concept, but for the most part, we go to relatively stable democracies. Most of what people hear about Doctors Without Borders is usually there being a Doctors Without Borders volunteer who is killed as in collateral damage in a conflict somewhere else. So there's probably a Doctors Without Borders volunteer hospital that is supposed to have like Red Cross humanitarian immunity that has been hit by a stray something or other in Ukraine or in the Middle East somewhere and has caused a fatality either of the patients there or of the Doctors Without Borders volunteers. EWB does not deal with that. We do not go into the line of fire. We do Sable stuff. We work in communities that want to partner with us, that want to try to do sustainable infrastructure that they eventually can take over. Most of our work is dealing with water, either getting access to it or making it a better resource. So we're drilling a well or we're putting in tanks to actually get a well to be functional, or we're dealing with sanitation facilities. Our project specifically is building toilets at a primary school that was built in the 1970s that has not had a lot of governmental support and has not built up a lot of infrastructure. We have to partner with an NGO, a non-governmental organization. So our NGO is, I'm looking up their Instagram because that is the place where we've gotten most updates, is called ASAP, Africa School Assistance Project, and you can check them out. I think Africa School Assistance Project on Instagram is where they've posted most of the updates, and I'm in one of the videos there, and they posted a lot of other photos as well of the construction that they've had going on there. So we're building a pit latrine. That is a very simple toilet facility. Listeners, effectively, you dig a giant pit, you line it with stone, then you build a slab, the concrete floor above that, and then you build bricks above that to actually create the roof. Sometimes some privacy walls. We had privacy walls as well. And so we were there for the main important structural components of it. So the building of the slab, the concrete columns, which are the up and down, the vertical components made of concrete, and then beams are horizontal as well. So we were there for that. Some of the construction started before us. Some of the construction, less important, is being built after that. I will put links to both our NGO, ASAP, and to Engineers Without Borders, specifically the Denver Professional Chapter, for people who want to read up more on what we do, how we do it, where we're doing the work, not just in Tanzania. I'm the project lead for the Tanzania project. We've been working on this for like 6 years. COVID delayed us. We had lack of funding. We had to do a redesign because they didn't like the urine-diverting toilets that we built in 2018. Mark, this has been a lesson for me in dealing with the developing world and some of the logistical complexities and hardships that come with that that are not convenient relative to what I've dealt with here in the States, where running out of rebar is not a thing that happens. We get plenty of rebar and we can get more rebar within an hour, not within a week, kind of a situation. And it's a way for me to give back to a community that is in desperate need of it. I have talents as an engineer that I'm capable to give back to, and I could not think of a better way to provide that than to provide that to an increasingly, a community in a part of the world that is being left behind from a technological standpoint. This is a community where there are dollar-a-day farmers, there are people with cell phones, but who do not have reliable running water, and getting malaria every couple of years is just a fact of life. Getting diarrhea because you don't have potable water and easy access to potable water on a daily basis is just a fact of life. And so we built a facility that's going to become the new girls' bathroom, and that's going to be a sanitary place that is going to have rain catchment that's going to allow them to wash their hands and be hydrated a little bit more frequently than they have been. And that is going to allow the students to have a sanitary place to do their business, and that is going to lead to fewer days lost due to diarrhea. We've put in special considerations in our operations and maintenance manual to account for the older female students who are starting to go through puberty and dealing with their menstrual cycle. Going through your menstrual cycle is such a thing in that part of the world where you just miss school for a week. And now they have a facility to deal with that a little bit more on site, to where maybe girls are going to school a little bit more with that. And on that note, Mark, there's a girls' dormitory for the secondary school in the area that is named Kupanda. Kupanda is the Swahili word for to elevate or to lift up. And one of the murals that they have with that I really like is a quote from Baba Wa Taifa, who is the father of the nation. He's the first president in the history of the country, and they have a mural outside that reads, "Education is not a way to escape poverty, but a way to fight it." And then they also have an African proverb out there that all their girls live by, which is, if you educate a man, you educate an individual. But if you educate a woman, you educate a nation. And I'm not saying that building a toilet facility means that their education is going to be any better, but it's one small incremental convenience for girls in this area that hopefully is going to help them better themselves, better their families, and ultimately better their country. Tanzania will be a better country by having an entirely literate population and a population that is completely fluent in English and Swahili. And for me to show up and do a little bit of work and understand a little bit about construction logistics and concrete and structural engineering to make something that's safe for them to make, you know, a 1% increase in bettering their lives. We're just giving them tools to get their education. I couldn't think of a better way for me to give back from an engineering standpoint, given all the resources that I have available to me as a white man who lives in a first world, relatively stable democracy relative to Tanzania. And so all of the altruism, all of the joy that I got from that, and most importantly, we're making a difference in people's lives in some small way. And I can't wait to go back. I'm so excited. I couldn't think of a better way for me to burn, 8 to 10 days of vacation time and work 4 10s in the weeks before and after to save time on vacation and to miss a couple Rapids games to do something like that, as opposed to sitting on a beach or shredding some gnar in the winter. But thank you for entertaining this, Rabbi, and listeners, given that this is not about soccer. But yeah,
it's great. And if you're at home, Matt is wearing a fantastic kit of the Tanzanian national soccer team. It's really great. I'll throw it up on our Twitter and our Facebook for those of you to see. Matt's a legend. We really appreciate the universe appreciates Matt for going and putting in the work for people. You know, sometimes the best things you do in life are without compensation financially, because they're kind of like compensated by the good vibes in the universe. So good job, buddy. If you don't feel like you've been getting enough pats on the backs from the people around you for doing a good thing, you know that I love it when you do a good thing. Although we desperately missed you here back in the United States commenting on the Colorado Rapids and their trials and travails over the last couple weeks. We'll get into it, but they went 1-1. 1-0-1 without you. 1 win, 0 ties, 1 loss. So the club is 500 when you take it on the road. They themselves are not necessarily 500 on the road themselves. So
I think the answer is, Mark, when the Rapids get paired up with Portland in the playoffs, I think I need to plan an emergency trip to go back and do a monitoring assessment of the facility that we built. The Colorado Rapids are undefeated in against the Portland Timbers when I am in Tanzania, and are winless.
Oh, nice.
and aggregate score, 8-1 when I am in the United States. So I think that's a stat that we need to focus on as well. Mark, I will also say
We play better against Portland when Matt is in the subcontinent of Africa.
Yeah, but also, Mark, when I go to the African subcontinent, actors who were voice actors for The Lion King also die. So that was maybe not so much fun.
And P. Diddy has legal troubles out the wazoo.
Oh my God, so. Mark, can we talk about, so our the Wi-Fi, no disrespect to our NGO, ASAP was absolutely wonderful. The staff were amazing. The internet that we had, given that we had 4 Americans trying to answer work emails at 2 a.m. and also like occasionally check in with their family. Like the extent of my internet access, Mark, was basically in the WhatsApp to our other project lead who was stateside, who wasn't able to travel, basically saying everything's good, or we need this document, or we need an explanation of something because we don't have access to Dropbox or access to Google. And then messaging my mom saying that I was alive and wasn't eaten by a lion and didn't get malaria. So, Mark, just like Mitch, who explained this on the last episode of HTHL, I did not learn about the Reggie Cannon signing until the day after.
Nice.
From the official press release. I had no Twitter access. And then also, Mark, you remember we were there during the debate as well, where one of our friends got a message saying that Trump said something about pets in Ohio getting
right.
eaten. So we try to look this up, right? But the Wi-Fi is so bad that we can't get any of the videos that have the sound
nice.
Clip to actually work. So, and none of the articles can load as well. So we just try to find an article that literally just has the quote in text as well. I find it from one of the NPR articles. Again, we can't get YouTube to work. We can't get any of the any of the Instagram stuff.
Matt hasn't seen any of the remixes of they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats.
Oh,
eat
I saw
the dog,
that.
Eat the cat.
I finally saw that.
These are bangers, man. They're good stuff.
I know, but so we had the text as it was transcribed, Mark, from the audio stuff, but we had none of the audio. So that's then we all start talking. How do we think he said it? And then one of us sees a comment. Is it an NPR commenting on how the guy who found out that it lines up with the Peanuts piano, the da 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 da
nice.
Da 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 da. So then we're trying to figure out like the timbre.
The dogs. They're eating the cats. Eating the dogs.
Find me another four American citizens, all with smartphones, who did not hear the actual audio of Trump saying they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats.
How many questions did you have to answer in Tanzania of this? Like, is this man going to be your president? How can he be the president? He thinks people eat dogs and cats. You know, like.
There's a not insignificant portion of the African continent, Mark, that.
Who likes him, probably.
Who likes Trump. But yeah, sure. We got some questions about that.
He's a bold speaking, big talking guy. Almost 50% of Americans think he's an interesting guy to talk to.
Yeah,
so I get the attraction.
So we got questions about that. So we had to talk about the politics and we kept it fairly basic. We didn't want to make it perceived that EWB was a political organization,
right?
Because we're not. But we got questions about that. Me and the other team member from Team Two, his name was John. We were there during on September 11th. So we got questions about that and how we think about that as we are, what, 23 years from that standpoint. And John got asked about what that was like as an adult. And I got asked about that, what that was like being a kid in school. I was in sixth grade in 2001. On September 11th. So we got asked about that. And we got a lot of questions as well, Mark, kind of disappointingly about. Matteo, Jean, we are on TikTok and we see Americans talk about Africa as if Africa is a country. Are Americans terrible at geography? And we're basically like, yeah. And then it was like, okay, can you name African countries? And of course, as someone who's in that area, who studied up on that, like I rattle off a bunch, they pull up a blank map of Africa. I'm able to point out a number of them. Finding Tanzania was not particularly difficult, but I had to be like, yeah, there's a bunch of Americans who don't know geography. And then I would throw it back to them and ask, you know, okay, like what states can you name? And surprisingly, Mark, there's some not great states, or there's some states that you would not think that they would know that they would know. A lot of them know roughly where Oregon is. Well, finding Texas, finding Weird. California, super easy. Guessing roughly where DC is, knowing where New York is, not that hard. They know Colorado's in the middle. They got mixed up between that one and Wyoming. I can forgive that, Mark. They were able to narrow it down to it's one of the rectangles or one of the other rectangular shapes near Nebraska and Kansas. They know where Colorado is. If you were to ask most Americans about the province that Mwanza is in Tanzania, it would be very, very difficult.
No, right. So,
wonderful cultural experience.
We're a big country. They're a little bit more obscure.
Yes.
My mom had this experience. She went to Europe a bunch of years ago, and they asked a whole bunch of questions about it was when Arnold Schwarzenegger was running for governor, and they asked all these. I think they were in France or Italy, and they asked on the train all these questions about like the gubernatorial election in California. And my mom was like, I don't even know what state I'm in Italy. And you people are asking me like specific political questions. So this is how it is when you go abroad. America's the center of the world and we're completely functionally ignorant about everywhere else in the universe. It's a little embarrassing and that's just how it is. So, and it's why a lot of Americans backpacking abroad stitch Canadian flags on their backpacks so that they don't look like big idiots.
I think we did a good job of representing America, and I think certainly the fact that we were there.
You dug pit latrines. You're a legend.
Yeah.
You drink for free in more than three different villages in Tanzania for the rest of your life. Congratulations.
We tried the natural
cuisine. And in my
cuisine.
Basement, anytime.
We tried the natural cuisine, and we very quickly abandoned forks and knives, especially when we got some makonge or some chips my eyes. So that got us a lot of street cred, Mark.
Nice.
And like, let's be real. I searched out, and I specifically went to our NGO lead, and I'm like, Tanzanian national team kit, whatever Tanzanian Premier League team you support, I want that kit. And I walked Mark to the local bar in the neighborhood through market day, getting yelled at by vendors about buying potatoes and ugali on the way there, where I drank a local Tanzanian beer and celebrated as if I was a Tanzania, as if I was a Taifa Star supporter for that. We embedded ourselves in the community. I feel at least 1% Tanzanian, Mark. So we represented America good. We did some good work, and I had some good time culturally, and I went on safari and got to see three young lions just sitting in a tree.
What?
Sitting under a tree, chilling. So nice. I will post a million photos and a whole thread about that. Listeners, if you want to reach out to me to learn more about that, I'd be happy to talk about my trip in any capacity. There will be links in the show notes to both the NGO that we partnered with and EWB Denver if you want to learn more about that, if you'd like to support that as well. We are in need for money for another implementation trip. It will take thousands of dollars for us to come back and build another classroom or another toilet facility or another teacher's office. We've got a whole alternatives analysis that we'll do before determining all of that. But we're hoping to be back in 3 years, hopefully cut that down to two. So,
all right, folks, thanks for joining us on the Engineers Without Borders podcast. It's been Rabbi in Red. It's nice to see you all. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Listeners, this past Wednesday, September 18th, the Colorado Rapids played at Sporting Kansas City and got their butts handed to them by SKC. A brace from Eric Tommy, a brace from Alan Pulido, goals from them. Pulido in the 8th and the 49th. Eric Tommy in the 69th, nice. And then in garbage time in the 82nd, the lone Colorado Rapids goal comes from Big Michael Edwards, who makes just his second start for the Colorado Rapids in the 75th minute with a off-foot, left-footed back heel off of a corner, completely how Chris Sharpie drew it up. Mark, we don't have a whole lot to say about this one. I did not watch this game live. I've seen the highlights since then. I was fast asleep with jet lag and everything. And Mark, we're obviously podcasting the week since, so our frame of reference for this loss is maybe colored in a positive way to how the club responded against Toronto FC on the weekend, which is how we'll talk about. But Mark, a disappointing result. A Sporting Kansas City team who I think has improved, an SKC team who I believe, Mark, in just a couple of minutes is going to be kicking off in the Open Cup final against LAFC, but certainly a disappointing result and just an occasional dud that this team is still capable of having, Mark, but one that they're obviously, as they showed, once again are capable of bouncing back from. Mark, we'll start with bad things.
Well, one of the things that's been historic, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast if you're a longtime listener, is that Peter Vermes teams like to possess the ball. This KC team has been getting away from that a little bit. It's one of their struggles, and they've been getting away from that kind of like framework for the last couple of years. The Colorado Rapids got totally dominated on possession, 54-46. Now, normally that doesn't sound like domination, but the reality is when SKC took a lead at 8 minutes in and then added to it in the 49th minute with two goals from Alan Pulido, the Rapids. Normally, the way that works when you are behind, when you're leading in a game, you kind of like cede possession to the opposing team because you don't need the ball. You're like you guys have the ball. We'll kind of like bunker down a little bit, and you know we'll see if you can figure out how to work your way back into it. SKC didn't do that. They dominated possession throughout the game. Colorado really looked that. They had a hard time stringing passes together and finding their way through the muck. They really struggled to kind of like move beyond just like recycling it around the back line. At the end of the game, the stats were kind of devastating for the Rapids. This was like an absolute crater of a match for them. 31 total shots for SKC, 6 for Colorado. 2.72 expected goals for SKC, 0.85 for the Rapids. This was like overall just kind of like a total lump of a game. They just didn't have it. They didn't show up. You know, it was a long League's Cup, and then the Rapids kind of like snapped right back into the season. And then we had this midweek game, so the Rapids functionally had 3 games in 8 days. It's a lot for the team. They didn't kind of respond to it well, considering that they got a good result against Portland. Then they get a weird result against KC, and then, of course, they will ultimately, as we're going to talk about in a minute, get a good result against Toronto. This can be forgiven. But it was a little surprising. In particular, the back line looked really not up for this. Maxo kind of like muffed the first play that Pulido put into the goal. The ball got recycled into the box. He put a foot to it. It rattled out off of it. He didn't really kind of like handle it well. It bounced right to Pulido and he pounded it home. You know, the second goal was something of a misplay as well for the Rapids. And at that point, it was irrelevant what they did for the rest of the game. So it wasn't a great match overall. I think the inability to string passes together was a little bit surprising. It was also interesting to see SKC Children's Mercy Park Stadium sort of empty. It was pretty sparse, the attendance, at least at kickoff. So I don't know if I've seen that before, but this is what happens when Sporting Kansas City start the game in 12th place. So that's where they're at. They are 11 points adrift of the Western Conference playoff chase right now. So it doesn't look like this matters to either team, since, as we will talk about also in a minute, the Rapids clinched a playoff spot on Saturday. Matt, any thoughts from you?
If only we had good data, Mark, on whether or not MLS teams can sell tickets on midweek games, particularly when there's so much fixture congestion at the beginning and the end of the season, because we take a month and a half off for a money grab tournament like League's Cup. So if only we had data on that. But no, I hear you on that, Rabbi. The only thing that I'll really add is I think a telltale sign for me, Matt, Mark, for when the Rapids are going to have a dud performance is when defensively just the gap control in what I'll call like the defensive box. So the two center backs and then whoever's in the double pivot, or we could almost call that a triangle if Cole Bassett's in the double pivot. So then he moves up. So then the base of your triangle is your two center backs. In this case, it was Andreas Maxu and Michael Edwards. And then usually Connor Ronan, occasionally Ollie LaRoz in that position. When that's not sound, or when that's a gap or a shape that's not in a good rest defensive position or does not recover well in transition, and opponents find joy in that space, or we could even say rather than just the box, Mark, we could even just say zone 14 if we're talking top of the 18-yard box and then slightly inside it as well. You know, all four of the goals that SKC creates comes from an opportunity where SKC is just able to play through that relatively easy. That's something that LAFC has found joy in. That's something that LA Galaxy has done really well. When the Rapids are not doing well, Mark, particularly defensively, either that area is an absolute sieve or just the fullbacks are just absolutely getting cooked by their opposition. I'd say that's more a loss at Portland than say what this situation was with Sporting Kansas City. And so, you know, Mark, you and I both rate Connor Ronan. We both think he's the best of the D-mids that the Rapids have. But I think we need to acknowledge, like, we've seen enough of these games where he's been a bit of a passenger or not gotten a tackle in some of these situations, or maybe been overly aggressive. Like, he gave up a penalty in League's Cup, I remember. I don't remember which Mexican team that was against. You know, I don't think that Connor Ronan is the number six that he was last year, Mark. Now, the defensive shape is different. The players that he's playing with, to a certain extent, the Rapids aren't really playing with a true number six. You know, it's an 8-6 and an 8-10, really, if we're talking about Cole Bassett, or it's an 8-6 and then a true 8 is the internal terminology that at least they used under Robin Fraser. But I think we've seen enough of these games, Mark, where there was an opportunity for Connor Ronan to really take the grab the game by the scruff of the neck, and he hasn't done that in ways that he didn't do last year. Now, is that structural? Is that what the club's telling him to do? Is that something, a failure on him? Is that a function of him being the one good cog around what is otherwise just completely discombobulated mess, a la Jack Price in his first year with the Rapids, where basically the 3-5-2 that Anthony Hudson was trying to run out, there was just no coherence in the midfield other than Jack Price's role. But I'll give some credit to Judgmental Jim, Mark. I think if we could hop in a time machine right now and get like August 2021 Jack Price and put him into that position, Mark, I think this Rapids team is way more dangerous come playoff times in that situation. So I still think that's a weakness that the Rapids have. That is something that they've proven that they can overcome sometime in games. But, you know, we had this conversation, Mark, I think maybe 2 months ago, where we were talking about how when the Rapids are bad, it just gets really, really bad really, really quickly. And we commented on that by saying that the only time that the Rapids have come back from a multi-goal deficit was at home against Minnesota United, where it was in the first half and they still had plenty of time to come back. This is still a team that on their worst day, they are fighting uphill and they mostly don't come back in that. Most teams that, you know, go down 3-0 at some point in the second half don't come back from it. It does not happen very often for the Rapids, but one of the things that I'm still kind of worried about, Mark, or that I need more data on is just the end game doom prediction that I've had about this team for a couple of months now, that potentially their season ends in a non-competitive blowout road loss to a team that's just way more talented than them. That is just confirmation, Mark, of what I think you and I have been suspicious of or doubted for a number of years, which is that the Rapids way can make them a perennial playoff team. It can make them a dark horse for MLS Cup. But when it comes to it, they're going to have to win two games, maybe three, probably on the road against teams that are more talented, that have a Cucho Hernandez or a Lionel Messi or a Lucho Acosta or a Dennis Bouanga. And there's 8 or 9 teams in MLS that are going to have that type of player when it comes to those playoff moments. And the Rapids are not one of them. And if they don't have that, are they able to overcome that? And games like these against SKC teams that you should beat continue to give me cause to pause or make me a little bit suspicious about that. Mike Edwards was not good defensively, Mark. I think he was directly at fault in 3 of the goals, but it was really nice to see him score his goal. I had a really good chat with him yesterday after training, so I'll be doing a feature on Big Effing Mike Edwards and what he's working on, his mantra of stay ready.
Is that an official title?
That is now, I will confirm this now, HDHL exclusive, Mark. It is a nickname that he does mind, that he does not mind. I do not like to amplify nicknames, Mark, that others come up with without getting the player approval first. Mikey has given the stamp of approval to Big Effing Mike Edwards from Judgmental Jim. It is a nickname that he is okay with. It is one that I don't know that he's encouraging Rapids fans to use, but I don't think he would mind others amplifying it. So Big Effing Mike Edwards did not have a good performance overall against Sporting Kansas City. He's aware of that. He's working on stuff. I will have a piece out later this week on what he's doing to improve on that. But really nice to see him score a goal and to get that as well. And Mark, for as bad as it was for the Rapids, it was the 60th minute and they were only down 2-0 because Zach Steffen continues to keep this team in games. And that will do the Rapids well, Mark. I think there will come a point in the playoffs where the Rapids are being outplayed and Zach Steffen will keep the scoreline within striking distance. And that continues. That is my counterpoint to my dooming end game for how the season could end. That is, Zach Steffen could make 3 big saves at LAFC that keep it to just 1-0 in the first half in time for the Rapids to mount a comeback. Mark, how much do we think that this was just the Rapids being tired? Or how much of this, I've said for me that this is a lingering thing that I think is something, albeit not a regularly occurring thing. Mark, are these all just random one-offs for you? Or is this an indication that this team does have some fatigue or has the ability to have a stinker and maybe that'll come in a playoff game?
I'm not worried. I mean, I think that this is just against type. I mean, my memory of, for some reason, SKC matches just stand out more to me than anywhere else. It might be that I've been there, but I don't think so. I think it's just that they're a battle-hardened, time-tested Western Conference rival that we see a lot of. And I really enjoy these matches against SKC because they're interesting tactically to break down. They're really interesting to think about. Although, you know, to be honest, I wasn't paying that close attention to this match because of the fact that it was midweek, because of where it kind of shook out in the schedule and where the Rapids are. So on one level, this is an anomaly and not something to be worried about. The Rapids are tired. The rotation of players was significant. I don't really know what to make of the fact that the midfield didn't seem to quite be able to kind of put anything together in this one. I think SKC swarmed well. But I think your broader point was interesting that, like, if they're going to struggle in a match like this, does it say anything about how they're going to play against LAFC in a major playoff match down the road? Like, does this raise some worries? I would say this, and I don't think this is a shocker to anyone who listens to this podcast. If the Rapids win MLS Cup this year, it will not be because that they are the best team in Major League Soccer. It'll be because of the same reason they won in 2010, which is that they showed up with a solid but unspectacular team, or a good but not great team, and they overachieved, or they won the moments of the games that they needed to win in order to be the underdog that kind of displaced the overdog. That's just a very fancy way of saying, like, this team is very much the team that will drop a clunker against SKC every once in a while because they're not the indestructibles. They're not the undefeatables. They're not an absolute MLS juggernaut on a foregone conclusion march to a championship the way that some of the champion teams in MLS have been the last couple of years. Columbus last year was just an incredibly dominant soccer team. LAFC the 2 years before. It would be hard. You'd be hard pressed to say anything like, oh yeah, they weren't the best team. Those were the best teams in the playoffs. Like, I don't think everyone picked Columbus to win everything, but most people thought like Columbus could go all the way. You know, this year it's the same thing. There's like about four teams, including LAFC, LA Galaxy, Columbus Crew, and Inter Miami, if I were to say the four, who look like likely candidates for MLS Cup final. If the Rapids crashed the party, they would be crashing the party. And this is one of those games where you kind of see that and why they're not necessarily going to be favored.
That Rapids team, Mark, in 2010 withstood a storm in the second half and in extra time of that leg at Columbus True, and they were able to survive it on the way to going to penalties and then winning in penalties. That was a Rapids team that made a handful of small mistakes, gave small opportunities in that final to David Ferreira, I believe, who won the MVP that year. And they managed to only get burned on it once. Is this a Rapids team that in those same moments where they get tested by an LAFC, a Seattle Sounders, a Portland Timbers on the road, maybe, can they withstand those 20 minutes and only concede one goal? Or can they not concede enough goals to where they're put out of it? How much of these experiences that they're having right now in the regular season, can that build up calluses to where then they are more prepared for those moments? They don't have to win those moments. They just can't lose. They can't fold. And we have seen the Rapids fold in some of those moments. We have seen them concede in those moments, but able to come back in games. We have seen this team lose games in the first half, but win the second half to then claim a moral victory, or at least claim progress off of that as well. But that's something that we'll need to see, Mark. That is, those moments will define the ending of the 2024 Colorado Rapids season come the playoffs. And can they behave like they did at Club America in that knockout game? Can they behave like they did through the opening 30 minutes against Philadelphia Union, where they only gave up one goal? Or will they be like they've been at LAFC, like they were at Sporting Kansas City? That is the question that will define the ending of the Colorado Rapids playoff run in 2024. Listeners, this past Saturday, the Colorado Rapids overcame or bounced back from said loss to Sporting Kansas City with a 2-0 victory over Toronto FC, or what I would argue, Mark, was effectively a TFC2 team. You can only beat the teams in front of you, and the most important thing was the Rapids bounce back and get a result in this one, and it was a fantastic performance from the Pids against a weakened Toronto FC team who were very much prioritizing their Canadian final that they had. Reggie Cannon with an absolute cannon of a goal in the 52nd minute to open the scoring, and then Georgi Mihailovic converts another penalty in the first minute of stoppage time. Mark, a comprehensive victory for the Colorado Rapids, some squad rotation from Toronto FC, and if we just overlook the basic underlying numbers as well, this looks like a very typical Rapids play a bad team that's probably not making the playoffs at home, and they have a very good performance in the first half, and they tweak a few things, and they get some big goals from their big players in the moments where they needed to, and ultimately, it was a comfortable win, and one that I think the Rapids can be proud of and build on from a performance standpoint and a results standpoint. Mark, where would you like to start, and why is it not the opening burgundy and blue goal from Reggie Cannon for a foot cannon?
Cannon for a foot cannon. I like that. Boy, this was a really, this is a great response game. I wonder if Chris Armas sat him down before the game and was like, you guys played like crap on Wednesday, let's turn it around today. This was such an exciting game by comparison. Colorado came in and then they just blasted the ball at Toronto, moment after moment after moment. There were a whole bunch of opportunities early in the game that had really high XP that I wanted to note. The first one, I think, was at the 6th minute. I think it was the 6th minute that there was that little cool flicky move from Rafa Navajo, where he flicked it with his... The ball came to him, and the only way for him to receive it was like this kind of funky side heel flick thingy that like lofted over. And former Colorado Rapids Shane O'Neill cleared it off the line. Shane O'Neill, one of my favorite MLS players of all time, not because he's a really great guy. In fact, rumors back in the day when he was negotiating with the Rapids front office to try and stay were that he was and his agent were a real pain in the butt. But the fun trivia fact for old head MLS, old head holding the Highline fans, is that he's the result of one of my favorite trivia questions. Shane O'Neill was involved in some very questionable business. There's a period in ML in soccer, which still somewhat exists, but it's pretty rare these days, where a team operates as a third-party pass-through agent to kind of transfer a player to another team. And Apollonia Limassol in the Cypriot First Division was the landing spot for Shane O'Neill. Although rumor has it, allegedly, he says, HDHL's lawyers inform him he must use in order to indemnify him from any lawsuits, that the Apollonia Limassol sale was always actually kind of a pass-through move, so that effectively the transfer of Shane O'Neill to another team could be effectualized by his agent, who Apollonia Limassol would kind of like send a cut of the transfer fee to, allegedly. Anyways, that was all reported by Howler, the soccer magazine of blessed memory that no longer exists today. But anyways, yeah, he went abroad to Europe. It didn't really shake out. He came back to MLS, and now he's with Toronto. But Shane O'Neill, a native Coloradan, who cleared it off the line for the Rapids. I just really wanted to share that story for the 4 millionth time on this podcast. A few minutes later, in the 19th minute, the Rapids had another really great opportunity on goal. And they didn't convert it, ultimately. I'm trying to find that goal, that chance itself, but I don't. Oh, Cole Bassett in the 18th minute with a 0.19 expected goals chance that got turned away by a fantastic save. There were a few saves late on in the first half, but Colorado just looked like they were bossing Toronto at home. And then finally, in the 52nd minute, Darren Yapi, sending over Darren Yapi, playing sort of as a striker, sort of as a winger in this game. Really interesting. I love it when Yapi is not playing at center forward, and the Rapids kind of use him in like a 4-2-2-2 kind of format where him and Rafa like pair off each other. That happened a little bit in this game, and then sometimes he was kind of like coming off the wing. In the 52nd minute, he's coming off the wing. He hits this really great cross, low cross on the ground. Reggie Cannon takes it one time and just slots it into the far corner on the left side low and puts them up 1-0. This was not the way I thought this game was going to go. I thought Reggie Cannon had some moments in the first half that I really liked and some moments that I really didn't. I didn't think he was dispossessed in a 2-on-1 early on that resulted in a dangerous Toronto chance. Overall, I wasn't entirely convinced. The other thing about Reggie Cannon starting in this game, very simply, Matt, was I wasn't aware that the Rapids were going to start Reggie Cannon as our left back. I assumed that he was, and I think this is what me and Mitch talked about on the podcast the week you were gone. Me and Mitch thought that he was going to kind of like cameo at right back this year, and then next year become the starting right back, so that Keegan Rosenberry could slide over, Lalo Sabubakar could move to the bench, Maxo could be our starter, right? Like, that was the dominant theory. And then this game, it was he started at left back, and they put Sebastian Anderson at right back, and they both look great. I mean, it was a good thing, but like, the Rapids currently have a problem where they have too many fullbacks. I mean, Keegan Rosenberry is still an extremely effective fullback, and Sam Vines is still an extremely effective left back. So the Rapids have a glut of players at this position. So that was a little bit of the Reggie Cannon. Darren Yapi, in the second half had three amazing chances between like 66 and 90. And the last one he kind of muffed because he took it on a second touch. He got fouled in the box. It turned into a Mihailovic penalty, which was converted. And, you know, Bob's your uncle. That was the end of the match. But overall, the Rapids bossed this one completely. They dominated the game altogether. There was nothing that they didn't control. They controlled expected goals. They controlled time of possession, total shots, accurate passes, big chances, shots on target, corners, total shots. They controlled everything. I mean, they were totally dominant in this match, which was shocking because we previewed this game and we kind of thought, like, Toronto has some weapons. They can do this. Insigne and Bernadeschi had been playing well. Bernadeschi started this one on the bench. I guess Toronto have sort of kind of like, you know, have to rotate the team. Their loss put them down in eighth. They're still white knuckling their way into the playoffs. They're going to need to put something together over the final couple of games of the season in order to hold off Philly and Montreal and stay in the playoffs. But we'll see what happens. Matt, your thoughts on this match? I said a lot of things.
You took most of the points that I had on this one, Mark. You know, again,
sorry, buddy.
I wasn't able to watch this game live. Saturday, I was still feeling it really rough from the malaria pills, listeners, and then also my jet lag and everything. So I was double screening this game with the big TV showing the Miami Hurricanes football team. College football, Mark, is off to a really, really good start. And so we had a big matchup against USF where they sold out large sections of Raymond James Stadium, which is a rarity for the USF Bulls. So I was watching us kick their butts in the second half. And then it was like 8:30 and I'm like, I'm super tired. I'm just going to go to bed and then naturally wake up at 4 a.m. so I can go on a hike to see the aspen leaves changing. So I finally had some fun in the mountains on the Sunday, Mark. But, you know, I agree with what you said. It was nice to see Reggie get off to a really good start with the Rapids. Obviously, his debut wasn't good for him in terms of the team result, but for him to come in and, Mark, I would say look more dynamic in terms of what he's doing from an attacking standpoint. We've seen Keegan Rosenberry do good work in possession and then maybe making the pass before the pass, but not necessarily being directly a threat on goal. And you and I have, you know, long documented the enigma that has been Sam Vines this year in 2024. I think Jackson Travis has looked okay, Mark. He will make a mistake that I think will put the rest of the team defensively in a bad situation. But he continues to go through long stretches where, if I told you, you know, this is a teenager who's still getting his first 1,000 minutes in at the first team level, you would be impressed by what he's done. And for a team that shipped 4 goals on the Wednesday, Mark, I would say he was not directly at fault in any of the 4 of them. So that's an improvement off of, say, his performance at Houston, at Vancouver from earlier this season. So nice to see what Reggie was able to do. Nice to see just a team performance. You know, maybe from what you said about the chances that were created, Mark, you know, this probably should have been a 3-0, maybe a 4-0 game. This is probably a game the Rapids should have been leading at the first half, but they continue to show that when things go well in the first half, they're able to make a couple slight tweaks. Chris Armas is able to reinvigorate the boys with what he says at halftime, and then they come out and assert themselves in the game and have the final scoreline and the final underlying numbers reflect how much better they were than the opposition. Maybe the only negative I have from this one, Mark, is the fact that they did it against, again, a rotated TFC team, a TFC team that's not very good, a TFC team that's playing at altitude and obviously has a cup final in the Canadian Cup or the Voyager Cup. I can't remember what it's still called at this point, Mark. You know, they were clearly, you know, had one eye on that. But look, the Rapids took care of business against a bad team that I don't think is making the playoffs that they should have beaten. You know, we should not be complaining about this. And the fact that they did it, Mark, with their final new signing of the year, getting a goal, Georgi Mihailovic bossing the game, scoring on a penalty, and for them to set a bunch of individual records and to, again, qualify the playoffs were fantastic. I will do something that we don't often do here, Mark, is normally we will reference this information, but we will not actually call it out specifically. So I want to give some credit, as always, to the Rapids comms team for the post-game notes they have in this and some of the things that are interesting from that standpoint. So I'll just read off some of the highlights that we had from this game. Mark, I pulled up the wrong email. Post-game notes. So here we go. The Rapids are now unbeaten in 13 consecutive games at Sporting Goods Park in all competitions. What else do we have individually? Zach Steffen got his 6th clean sheet and 7th across all competitions in competition, and Georgi Mihailovic's goal contribution he's now contributed a goal contribution in each of the last 4 home games. He's got 3 goals, 3 assists. This was his 13th assist of the season, so he's now tied Chris Henderson and Adrian Paz for the 2nd most in a regular season. He is coming for Diego Rubio's goal contribution record. Mark, he is just one behind Diego Rubio, or excuse me, no, Georgi has surpassed Diego Rubio from that 2022 MLS season with his 23rd and his 24th goal contribution. And so I think I would expect, Mark, that Rafael Navajo breaks that record from a goal contribution standpoint. And I believe Cole Bassett's just 1 or 2 goals behind for joining both of them in the 10-10 club as well. So this just continues to be an amazing offensive season that the Rapids are putting out, and absolutely fantastic to see. As you know, we just hit the anniversary, the 1-year mark from the walkout that we saw against New England Revolution as well. And the Rapids are going to the playoffs, Mark. The Mark Bodmer number is now technically at a negative number. So barring a financial fair play or some other issue where the Rapids actually get fined points, which I don't think has happened in MLS, the Colorado Rapids will go to the playoffs. And right now, Mark, with what, 5 MLS games left to go at this point, it's getting as many results as you can to try and push your way up the standings to get the highest seed that you possibly can. Mark, I still think this is a team that could finish top 4. In MLS, this is the team that absolutely should expect to have home field advantage in that round of 3 opening round that we have in the playoffs proper.
Anything the Rapids else? Can make the European Champions League. They're going to finish top 4. This is fantastic. That's a Premier League joke. That makes no sense here. But yeah, the Rapids have already made the actual Champions League because they finished 3rd in the whatchamacallit, in the League's Cup. So,
Colorado. Take that, Tottenham Hotspur. Take know, that, right? Chelsea. You're not even in Champions League. The Colorado Rapids are in Champions League. Small clubs in London. Small clubs in London.
Wow. But yeah, this game was surprisingly meaningful, I would say. I mean, you know, with the Rapids in the driver's seat on September 25th as we record this, you know, does that change the way they approach these final matches? I don't think so. They might do a little bit of resting down the stretch, but I think, you know, there's this trade-off that managers have with resting players down the stretch, which is they could get dull. They need to stay kind of like battle-tested. But that means, of course, that like if you get a player who draws a yellow card in the first half, or a player has a little bit of a knock in training going into a match, like you'll just hold them out and be protective of them. You know, I think there's, based on this match, there are a lot of questions to ask at fullback of like who's going to be the playoff back line. You know, was Reggie Cannon going to be anointed our starting left back for the rest of the season? Is Sebastian Anderson going to be mixing it up with Keegan Rosenberry, or, you know, is Captain Keegan going to reclaim his throne? These are all good questions. I would expect that we're going to see Cannon and Rosenberry in the next match, but I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see Vines and Rosenberry the match after that, and Anderson and Vines the match after that, if we just keep mixing and matching, because all these guys are capable and they can all get it done, and they all give a little bit of a different look, and I think they also scramble the opponent. The opposition doesn't know what they're going to expect, and so they have to kind of like prepare for all eventualities, and that's a good thing.
I think I agree with you, Mark. I think we'll see a bit of squad rotation at the fullback positions. I think we'll continue to see that at the winger position as well. I was at training Tuesday this week, listeners. Lawless Abubakar and Sam Fiennes participated fully. So Lawless is back from concussion protocol. I would expect him to be available, Mark. I would expect him to start over Mike Edwards on the weekend against Minnesota. I think Sam Fiennes, we'll see what happens. Hamstrings are difficult, and you don't necessarily want to rush him back a little bit early and then have him re-aggravate it and maybe miss 3 weeks rather than being back maybe a week later than you would have liked. Reggie Cannon was there participating fully, Mark. And I did see that Kevin Cabral is back as well. And so he was doing some team passing drills. Nothing where there was any kind of significant contact. He still had a significant like medical wrap around his right elbow. I believe that was the elbow that he had injured, and he was doing some individual work as well. So he is working on some fitness stuff. Listeners, he is working on some ball skills as well. I'm under the impression that he is still a couple of weeks away. I think that timeline that we had that would have had him back the week of decision day or the first week of the playoffs is probably still kind of fair. So we'll probably continue to see, listeners, some squad rotation where it's probably Calvin Harris starting and Omer Fernandez subbing in for him or vice versa. And then similarly, a platoon situation with a Jonathan Lewis, maybe a Kamani Stewart-Baines off the bench as well. I do think, Mark, we'll see a little bit of squad rotation in that three-game week that you have coming up because there's the midweek home game against LA Galaxy. I would still think that Chris Armas is still going with, for the most part, trying to win the game in front of him and focusing on that until there's nothing left to play for. If the Rapids are locked in terms of their seeding on decision day, Mark, I think we'll see full squad rotation. Sebastian Anderson, Michael Edwards, maybe even a Jasper Lofelson get minutes as well. But as long as there's an opportunity for the Rapids to build on what they were doing to build momentum going into the playoffs, and especially as long as there's an opportunity for them to move up in the standings, Armas is absolutely going to go for that. The way that the Rapids overcome those difficult moments where it'd be playing at LAFC, at LA Galaxy, is by having as many home games as possible and as high of a seed as possible against those types of teams in the playoffs. And that means getting as many points as you possibly can. Don't take games off. Don't take them for granted, and don't punt on them through squad rotation and end up losing to the LA Galaxy midweek. Anything else that we want to say about this match, Rabbi? No. Let us move on to our Ask HTHL, which comes from our very own listener, Matthew Schmieman, Mark, who asks of the ex-Rapid Snell in MLS, Rubio, Zardes, Markanich, Gutman, etc., who is having the best and worst season? Hashtag Ask HTHL. He also throws in Dom Baji, William Yarbrough, and Clint Irwin. Mark, would you like me to run down through how everybody's doing and where they are at?
Why, please do, Matt. That sounds wonderful.
Okay, so I've got a bunch of tabs open, Mark, so we're just going to open with that. Dominic Baji is back in MLS. We covered that maybe a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago when it would have happened. He is back with DC United. He has made 5 appearances and 1 start for 138 minutes. He does have a goal for DCU as well. Listeners, he's mostly a bench player to Christian Benteke, who's their big DP goal scorer and kind of a foil as a channel runner. He's playing okay. Dom's, I think, resigned himself to being a bench player for the rest of his time in MLS, and he scored. He signed like an 18-month contract, Mark, which I think, you know, is prorated like almost $1 million over the course of that. So Dom's doing just fine. Dom, get your money, even if you're on a bad team and not necessarily playing well. Andrew Gutman had a injury to the start of his time with the Chicago Fire, but he's working his way back and he's starting, Mark. He's played in 11 games and has played about 700 minutes, and he just scored his first goal for the Chicago Fire. But he also plays for the Chicago Fire, who are really, really bad and might be hiring Greg Berhalter because they can't get literally anyone else better to coach this team. But he's playing for his hometown team, so maybe he and the fiance are happy. I'm not sure. Jossie Zardes has been a mix of a starter and a bench player for Austin FC. He's got 3 goals and 2 assists in about 1,100 minutes so far this season, but also he's playing for Austin and they're spiraling. Mark, I don't know if you saw, but Sebastian Driussi had a bunch of really cryptic likes and retweets on stuff that was critical of ownership, critical of Josh Wolf, who I'm still not sure how he still has a job there. And I think Austin right now is at best one and done in the wild card right now, but Jossie Zardes is getting the bag, so who really cares when it comes to that? One Austin player who I know is not enjoying himself is one Diego Rubio, who's played in 29 games. He's played 1,600 minutes, but he has only 4 goals and 1 assist. Diego's a salty MF-er. He is probably not happy with his individual performances. He's not happy with how Austin has been so far this season, and he's probably not happy with his role and the fact that he's probably not in as good of a team. Rubio has been healthy, and he's not playing well, and Austin's not playing well, and they have 4 games left in the season, and they are 7 points back from the red line. They are in 11th in the Western Conference. I would be shocked, listeners, if they make the playoffs, and if they are, it's probably going to require a win at home on decision day against the Colorado Rapids. Diego Rubio is not enjoying himself personally, nor as a collective. Clint Irwin has been mostly a backup this year for Minnesota United. He's played in 5 games, and his most recent appearance for the organization was with the MLS Next Pro team. Glenn Irwin's a backup in MLS. He's probably resigned himself to that. He's played 450 minutes. Minnesota's okay. They're not great. Mark, do you want to guess where Anthony Markanich is currently playing? Because it's not St. Louis City, and I would not have guessed this before looking this up 2 minutes ago.
I did not know that. I assumed he was in St. Louis. Go ahead.
He's somewhere at some point. Listeners got traded to Minnesota United, so we are officially on Anthony Markanich revenge tour this weekend. He has yet to make his debut for the first team for Minnesota United. He's made a couple starts for the Loons too, so he's on with them. And Mark continuing to play in markets where rent is relatively cheap, and he's getting more money than he was for Denver when he was living in Denver and only getting like $60,000 a year. So Markanich in his St. Louis City career would have last season played in 10 games and had one goal, and this season he would have played in 19 games with 15 starts, and at some point got traded to Minnesota, where he's been a bench backup for them. So that's what's going on for him. Mark, the resurgence or the arrival of one Ralph Priso might actually be happening, because in the last four games for the Vancouver Whitecaps, he has played 84, 56, 45, and 45 minutes. He has now played over 300 minutes for Minnesota United. That is more than in any other season he had for either the Rapids or Toronto FC going back to 2021, with the exception of last year where the team was just so injured that he was getting minutes. So maybe Ralph Priso is actually finding himself, Mark. If nothing else, he's starting and he's on, I think, a decent Vancouver Whitecaps team. So you know what? Good for Ralph Priso is what I have to say. Mark, I've highlighted everything that's going on with everybody. I don't know that anybody individually is playing all that well. I don't know that anybody is on a better team than this Rapids team right now, which maybe speaks to the fact, Mark, that a bunch of Rapids players who were bad on the team in the last 2 years moved on from the Rapids. And even if they moved to teams that at the time were slightly better, they're not getting more minutes and their teams are not doing better, which shows that maybe they weren't very good players and they were bottom group of players fighting on a bottom team last year. But Mark, what do you make of this, and how happy are you for Ralph Priso given how bad he was for the Rapids?
I'm glad he's doing things. It was a bit surprising to me. I mean, I think I wish all these guys well, like Andrew Gutman's lack of success with Chicago is disappointing. I really liked watching Christian Benteke and Dom Baji combined with DC United a couple weeks ago. Really enjoyable. So I'm happy to see that. But and I guess when I saw Zardes and Rubio starting up top for Austin, I was like, this is not going to work. And I don't know why Austin thinks this is a good idea. Those were shocking ideas. But I'm very happy that Priso is doing good things with his new team. God bless the Vancouver Whitecaps. I think Priso as a Canadian, you know, succeeding with that team is important for him. But overall, like, I actually kind of like have a soft spot for Vancouver. I'm glad that they're doing well overall in the table.
I see a lot of similarities, Mark, between the Whitecaps and the Rapids with the way
I have for a long time.
The way that they built their team, kind of a vibesy manager who's doing some interesting things tactically, focusing really on club culture. You could draw a lot of parallels between Ryan Gauld and Georgi Mihailovic and their time in Europe and coming back as well. I don't know if Ralph Priso is the Ollie LaRoz in this analogy. Maybe, but. So no, I see the Caps as a kindred spirit when it comes to the Rapids, and long may they have success, preferably by eliminating the two LA teams in the playoffs this year.
Amen.
I think that does it for. We'd love to know, listeners, what you think. Oh, and I should point out as well, Mark, not technically with an MLS team, but a former Rapids homegrown goalkeeper, Abraham Rodriguez, has been with Toronto FC 2 in MLS Next Pro, and he's mostly been a starter for them. I don't have his Next Pro stats up because MLS doesn't post that. You know what? Let me look this up. So per Transfer Market, Abe Rodriguez has been with Toronto FC 2 this whole season, and he has 6 starts in MLS Next Pro, and he's played 540 minutes. He started in March. He had a period where he was getting some minutes earlier. It's kind of been stop-start. And most recently, he would have started on just this past weekend, September 22nd. He started against Red Bulls 2, and they lost 2-0, and he played 90 minutes. So womp womp for him. Goals were scored by Tanner Rosborg and Muhammad Sofa in the 8th and the 54th minute for Red Bulls 2. So probably two players that only Red Bulls 2 player aficionados would know about. So you know what, we're rooting for A-Rod, but yeah, he's probably an MLS Next Pro bench keeper at this point in his career. But we're rooting for him regardless. Mark, shall we look ahead to one Minnesota United as the Colorado Rapids travel to play the Loons on the weekend?
Let's do it, Matt.
So, listeners, Minnesota United currently find themselves in 9th in the Western Conference. They are in the final playoff spot. They have 42 points off of 30 games played. They have a record of 12-12-6. They have a goal difference of +2. And at home at the Allianz this year, they are 5-6-4. Colorado Rapids currently sitting 3rd in the MLS Western Conference. They got 50 points off of 30 games played. A record of 15-10-5, a goal difference of +8, and on the road this season, they are 5-8-2. Mark, this is a Minnesota United team that I would say has regressed since the last time these two teams played each other. Minnesota was kind of a wild card that had gotten off to a good start. They'd kind of rallied around the, you know, us versus the Reynoso news and having a dysfunctional organization from a we can't retain a head coach kind of a situation. Robin Ludd was cooking. They were looking okay defensively. Dane St. Clair is still in goal and has a Steve Clark syndrome about him where he can play well, he can stop penalties, but also occasionally he has butterfingers. Michael Boxall is still their main center back, and I believe also their captain, Hassani Dotson, is holding things down in midfield in the double pivot in a 4-2-3-1. Robin Ludd has been playing in the number 10 position mostly. Yeboah has been up top, but they also still have Timo Pukki, formerly of North City, in the championship. Boni Habwanga, I still don't know how to pronounce that name, if I'm being honest with you, Mark, is kind of their, I don't know that there's a good analogy.
Bongi Longway.
Bongi Longway, thank you very much.
Longwayne. Sorry, I have a stuffed up nose. I've been fighting. Apparently, what I hoped was allergies has turned out to be a cold. How many times has that ever happened to the rest of you all out in podcast nation? Anyways.
I'm not entirely sure. But so in any case, Mark, they've got a tricky winger in Bongi, who is from South Africa, and he is 24 years old. He's given the Rapids a little bit of trouble. I remember Adrian Heath praising him in a come from behind victory that the Loons had in Robin Fraser's last year. So this would have been the home fixture for the Rapids in like March of 2023. But so, Mark, this is a team that has cooled off. I believe they've only beaten, I think it's San Jose and Austin. Let me look this up, Mark, because I remember Minnesota United has not beaten any team other than San Jose and Sporting Kansas City since May. So, Mark, similar to what you and Mitch would have talked about with Sporting Kansas City, this is a bad team that's holding on to their playoff lives, who the Rapids got a draw with earlier this season, where the Rapids were still finding themselves. The opponent had not gone on a slide recently. This is a team that if the Rapids stop Robin Ludd and then mostly take care of business elsewhere, they should be able to beat. But also, this is the type of game, Mark, where the Rapids make two or three mistakes and inexplicably the opponent punishes them for all of them, and the Rapids are non-competitive and lose. I will say, Mark, that the Rapids are feeling better off of the Toronto FC game. I think having a full week back to rest and reset as well, and I think looking at Minnesota and particularly seeing their weaknesses, they did lose a 2-1 game to Cincinnati. I think Georgi Mihailovic is going to look to cook in this game. I think he will play well and have three or four big moments that he will mostly take care of, and the Rapids will lose what on paper is a close game. I think the Rapids win this one 2-1 in the second half.
Well, you covered that one like as if you were giving me a vacation after you did all the work, or I did all the work last week. Yeah, this Minnesota team has been double ungood. I think one of the things that's interesting about MLS teams is that sometimes from season to season, there complacent with the lineups that they have. They're happy with some of their players. So you've got like Will Trapp and Bongi Longwang and Robin Ludd. And you look at that team and you go, these guys were good last year. I'm sure they'll be good this year. And then you get a couple of other interesting players in there. Asani Dotson is a solid player, but has never really kind of sparkled. They added a couple interesting other players. Joaquin Perea, although he only has three matches this year. Kelvin Yeboah up top, 5 goals in 5 matches, which is exciting. And Tani Oluwaseyi, who I think that they expected more from, although he has 8 goals this year. You know, he just hasn't been provided with enough opportunity because the rest of the team isn't coming together. And I think there are a lot of problems along the back line. I don't think they really have put together what they need. Lastly, at goal, I think you mentioned this or alluded to it. Dane St. Clair just really hasn't been the guy. He had a hot moment where he was really exciting and people were talking about him as a potential starter for the Canadian national team a couple years ago, and like the long-term solution there. And he's doesn't seem to be the guy as much as people were excited about him a couple years ago. So this team is gripping with all of its efforts the dead last spot in the playoffs. That means that they have something to play for in this game, whereas the Rapids may be able to kind of like take a game off. They've been really putting it pedal to the metal though lately, so I'm optimistic about this one for Colorado. I think that the Rapids win this one 3-1, let's say. It's an exciting match for them. I do think I'm starting to wonder about whether the Rapids get things done on the road. These their road record, especially after this loss to Sporting Kansas City and their struggles against Portland, you know, it's kind of more of an open question about like whether like Dix is a fortress. Outside of Dix, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot. We'll see.
I'd like to correct myself, Mark. So this past weekend, or the most recent game that Minnesota played, was actually a 3-1 win at St. Louis. They got goals from Longway and Yeboah. Yeboah scored on a penalty for this one. So Minnesota has now beaten St. Louis, SKC, and San Jose since May. But in between that, Mark, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 losses in a row, and they lost 7 out of 8, but they have won 3 of their last 4. They won a home and away against San Jose. They lost 3-2 at home to Seattle Sounders, and then they got their win against St. Louis. But Mark, we also saw the Rapids take care of business absolutely in their 2 games against St. Louis. So again, parallels to the Sporting Kansas City game, this is a game that on paper, the Rapids are better than the opposition. If they play up to their potential, they should be able to take care of business. But if they play down to their competition, this could be a troublesome game. This could be a potential banana skin and one that they potentially lose as well. You know, for as much as, listen, Mark, as much as you and I have been naysayers or have had our Rapids PTSD of years past have us be skeptical of this team or predict 4 straight losses against the Liga MX teams, going in and winning this game convincingly is the type of result that shuts up that part of our prefrontal cortex, which has us doomsaying about this team absolutely. So I look forward to a comprehensive 3-0 victory with a Calvin Harris hat trick. And maybe we'll see Anthony Markanich come off the bench in this game, Mark, just like how you got to reminisce about Shane O'Neill this past weekend against Toronto FC. I think that'll do it for us, Mark. Oh, Rabbi, did you see the new statue that they put outside the Allianz?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the Capitol building. Johnny Cash was, they made a statue of Johnny Cash. I'm excited about that.
No,
I don't.
You didn't see the big huge loon statue that they put outside the stadium like this week?
Tell me about it.
Oh, so it's like it's like the crest that they have of the loon, and then it's got like this extension on one side that is like this super long like wingspan as well. So it looks really, really cool for those of you. So it's called The Calling, and it was done by Andy Scott, and it's got like these weird like metal sheet panels that make up like the pieces of it. And then it assembles into the actual loon, and it's got like the loon is like bursting like out of the grasses if it's coming out of the water, and it's got the wings, and they're all shiny, and they've got like a color fade on it as well. and it looks like different depending on like what time of the day as well. I'll put a link in this as well. So this is a part of the this is the Snell Midway development project that's trying to revitalize the area around the stadium. And so it was done by LA-based artist Andy Scott. It is 33 feet high and 88 feet wide, and it's got this super long wingspan. So it's this amazing like bird statue, which looks absolutely fantastic. We need a statue, Mark. We need like a waterfall thing or something going on, or you know, we need let us know, listeners, what statue do you want to see outside Dick's Sporting Goods Park that's maybe nature-based, not like a Marcelo Balboa bicycle kick. Though if there was going to be a statue of a player, I think that would be the first one probably. So let us know what you think about that, and hopefully this loon statue does not haunt the Colorado Rapids like I hope that Blucifer haunts the dreams of Las Vegas Raiders players. Shall we land this plane, Mark?
Let's call it a day.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96 Podcast. Send us your emails using the email address rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can support us financially. That's where you can find Mark's written work. You can find my written work on the Rapids at burgundywave.com, including my feature on Mike Edwards, which will hopefully be out before kickoff on Saturday night. I will be covering as well, listeners, the Jägermeister Cup, which is a new cup competition in the USL, as USL League One side Noco Hailstorm will be hosting that final on Saturday. So look out for that content as well. Check out Africa School Assistance Program ASAP. Check out EWB Engineers Without Borders Denver. Links will be in the show notes there. And check out ASAP on Instagram if you want to see photos of that really cool bathroom structure that I built at the Bulo Umbeshi Primary School. Listeners, Karibu. We'll see you next week.
Peace.